Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Dagnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Welcome. Welcome, Earth Explorers. So glad to have you here with us this evening. We're coming to you live from southern Mississippi. Our AccuWindow forecast, overcast, 30% chance of rain, light breeze off the Gulf, about 82 degrees. Glad to have you here. If you want to be part of the program tonight, we encourage you to do so. 530-413-4511. We're going to leave the phone lines open all night, all 3 hours, so call in anytime you like. We'll change the subject immediately to what you want to talk about. The reason I'm doing this is there are so many changes occurring right now in the Earth. The news can hardly keep up with them. They can't come up with theme songs fast enough. They can't find a new anchor for it fast enough. They're hiring staff right and left, and there's only 24 hours in a day, people. And by the time they recycle the news a few times, the main programs can't even keep up with it. So we're going to cover as many of these things as we can tonight. And I want you, if you've found something that interests you in the Earth changes, we want you to call in tonight. Now, we do have a mystery guest that there's a high likelihood that he will call in sometime during the 3 hours. I'm not going to tell you who it is in case he doesn't call. Then you won't be disappointed. If he does call, I promise, it's going to be controversial. We're going to talk about things that we both talk about on our separate programs. But it seems like when the two of us get together and we talk about it, the phones, the traffic just seems to quadruple. So it's been a while since we've gotten together and spoken, and so I've extended the invitation, and we'll see what happens. If you are east of Earth, you can reach us at 530-413-4515, and if you're west of Earth, it's 530-413-4520. And we have a growing audience out there with BBS Radio. We'll announce this several times during the night. But if you go to the website at either bbsradio.com, look at Channel 2, that's where we are. Or if you go to xsquaredradio.com, these numbers are posted. You can call in with your cell phone at 712-432-0075 and put in the access code 318-116-pound. We also have a large audience out there that connects to us with their iPhones through Safari. You can, through your data-enabled phone, go to the web, and you can stream the audio live, and it sounds pretty good. Of course, while you're streaming, you can also add a call to the phone, and you can actually call in. I don't know if you can actually listen to yourself while you're on the air because there's a little bit of a time delay. And if you can do it, you have more talent than I do. I would suggest that you use separate phones for that. The solar wind tonight is a brisk 357 kilometers per second. Sunspot 1176 has been reported to be radioactive. Sunspots 1177, 1178, 1180, and 1181 are active and hold the energy to produce M-class flares. 1176 is dragging a pair of long magnetic filaments, which the SDO is keeping very close real-time tabs on. This cuts across the solar disk. It's unbelievable in size. Two more sunspots are visible in the active region's wake. The entire starscape spans more than 500,000 kilometers from top to bottom. It's truly impressive. If you are a solar observer, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not, I would encourage you to make friends with one. It's kind of like having a friend that owns a swimming pool. You don't have to do any of the maintenance, but you get all the benefits during the summer. If you find somebody that's got a Coronado scope, and there are also two new products out, and we're not pushing the products, but you can attach these to a motor drive similar to what a telescope would use, and you can feed the imagery directly into your computer so that you can actually record or watch the sun and all its glorious detail, either in H-alpha or in the potassium ranges. And one is kind of a whitish blue tint, and the other one is spectacular. The H-alpha is just unbelievable yellows and oranges. And if you've never looked through a Coronado scope, you don't know what I'm talking about. You've seen a lot of still shots on the SDO site, and I'm sure they're proliferating around the web and various YouTube things. But until you've actually looked through the eyepiece and seen the sun real time through one of these scopes, it is truly amazing. It will just take your breath away. So I highly recommend buying yourself a Christmas present of a Coronado scope, especially during these times. By the way, in the news, of course, is the devastating damage in Japan left from the earthquake and the tsunami. The radiation has shown up in China, Las Vegas, and now Massachusetts. Isotopes of iodine-131 and xenon-133, which are two isotopes that are idiosyncratic to the reactor in Japan, and thus we know the source of it. It's sort of like a fingerprint or a smell. Just to quote the news, any material released must travel 10,000 miles across the Pacific Ocean, during which time it will be dispersed and diluted in the atmosphere to levels that might eventually be detectable, but which will not present a health hazard nor require any protective actions, says Eric Mattis, the radiation physicist for the Nevada State Health Division. Now, that division is, of course, very well tooled to give us this information because they have a very elaborate setup of detectors. And these detectors have been tied together in a network, and there's another one being built as we speak to try to track various radiations that are going around the planet. Just because they're cumulative, you know, these things have a 30-year to 12,500-year half-life, and they will decay, some in the gamma frequency range and some in the alpha frequency range. And an alpha particle is typically used in oncology to treat cancer because when it decays, the radiation normally is caught in dense tissues. That's why people that are exposed to radiation typically develop leukemia, because the bones are the most dense part of the body. They absorb the radiation. The radiation then decays, and when it decays, it kills the marrow's ability to produce blood cells. I'm not saying that's what would happen unless you accumulated enough low-grade radiation over time, which could happen. And that's why it's one of the hazards of having nuclear power as a source of energy. And Japan has more than 25 nuclear power stations. And it has become alarming. It's become of great concern, not only to Japan, because, as you know, they have no natural resources, no oil, no coal. They have to import everything, and so it just makes sense that they put their national product into buying nuclear power plants, which GE is happy to design and build and monitor. And of course, they are mostly state of the art. I've been to the site that was damaged, and when I visited it, there was some concern that tremors had compromised certain smaller aspects of the facility, which are repaired from time to time on a real-time basis. But this was just too devastating. It was too much. That being said, there were 36 earthquakes in the last 24 hours with 5 over 5.0. Now, I checked this database this morning, and there were only 21 earthquakes. Only two of them were over 5.0. The interesting thing is just a few hours ago, there was a 6.5 quake in Japan at the same spot. This is, in its own right, a devastating quake. This is not an aftershock. This is a new earthquake in the same place. So it's clear that the stress is not being relieved through this earthquake activity. This is very big in the geological community. This is new territory. Normally, when there's a major quake and a series of aftershocks, sometimes there's a series of pre-shocks and then a major quake, and then it ebbs off. The stress is relieved for 10 or 20 or 30 years. This is not happening in Japan. These quakes are hard. They are high amplitude, as is indicative by the Richter reading that we're getting. And they're repeated in the same place. So whatever is causing these quakes is not going away. And it keeps hitting this area over and over again. Workers have now been evacuated from the Fukushima site, and it is clear that it is going to be a total loss. How that radiation spreads around the world, well, that remains to be seen. And it's one of the reasons why we brought up this subject tonight, because we're going to talk about these earth changes relative to the union of the polarity. In places like Nevada, they have elaborate detectors set up because of the nuclear power plant that's there, and also because of the nuclear facilities that have been there since, well, before World War II. Most of the testing was done in and around this area. Now, we don't really know how dangerous this is for U.S. shorelines closer to Japan, like California and Oregon and Washington and the western coast of Mexico. But I do know from my own experience and my own professional training and education that this kind of radiation exposure is cumulative. So it is a short exposure is preferred. A long exposure at low grades can be not as degradative to human tissue as a short, high-intense burst would be. But nevertheless, the effects of it genetically, as genetic material is altered, you get cancers, you get all kinds of changes in the genetic code. They are accumulative, and they accumulate in the fish, and then you eat the fish, and then the radiation is in you, it's in your tissues, and then sometime in the next 30 years, those particles begin to decay. It's sort of like heavy metal pollution, whether it's iron or mercury or lead, it is cumulative in the tissues. And up the food chain, it gets more and more concentrated. So there you have it. Now, we're going to cover this in some detail. I also want to impress upon you, if you're a new listener, that we encourage you to call in. Our call-in number is 530-413-4511. I love to talk about just about anything that you want to talk about. So you're always welcome to call in. We call this X Squared Radio because it's a positive experience when you come in here. We don't excoriate you or castigate you, but we will be pursuing cogitation to a maximum degree. As you get ready for spring, I know you're throwing open the garage doors and looking in those musty things and clearing out some stuff and getting rid of things you haven't touched in the last 9 years, 8 years, mowing the grass, changing the oil and all the yard equipment and getting everything ready for a wonderful summer. While you're preparing that, while you're getting these preparations ready, I want you to think about emergency preparedness. Now, I took a little trip yesterday and went down to the Mississippi Gulf Coast on a bike ride, right up against the shore, right along Highway 90. I wanted to inspect for myself what was going on, what people have reported. And while I was down there, I was just outside of Biloxi, Mississippi. There was a large project going on, as you might imagine, on the Mississippi Gulf Coast as things are being rebuilt, casinos and hotels and such. And one of the things that I noticed is they had a large backhoe, and it was digging a tunnel, which they are concreting, and this is able to flow water actually underneath a sidewalk, which is right there on the coast, and they can monitor the water levels very well, and they can route water from underground areas, pump it up into this area, and it can go back out to sea. One of the things that you notice when you go down there is the difference between sea level and the sidewalk level isn't much. I would say 4 to 6 feet, something like that. The ocean, the Gulf comes up 4 to 6 feet, you're going to have water in the lobby. That being said, the Mississippi Gulf Coast area that I looked at yesterday has done an amazing job of refurbishing many new buildings. Of course, there are the carcasses of some buildings that have only been raised. That is to say, all of the walls and plumbing and glass and everything have been removed, but the steel and concrete structure is still there as a reminder of the devastating power of Katrina when it came through. Those buildings that are on the Gulf side of Highway 90 are still in pretty bad shape. So there's some new construction going on. But those on the Mississippi side of Highway 90 are quite spectacular. Some of these Antebellum mansions have been refurbished. The old military base that is down there that was a military academy now being run by the Biloxi police still has a fence around it. The buildings are still in pretty bad shape. Not enough government money to go around on that complex, but the casinos are, of course, back in business, brighter and better than ever. And the roads are pretty amazing. The highway and the bridge and everything is just fantastic how they've redone all that. One of the interesting things that I found is the backhoe had a trench open, which was dug down to about, 16 feet deep. This is 16 feet through the sands of the beach, so I can see the strata of the shore not 45 yards from the waves, okay? 45 yards from the water. Obviously well in the range of any kind of oil slick or anything that would have washed ashore there. Going down 16 feet through the sand in the strata, there is no evidence of oil whatsoever. Those rumors that have been spread of people going down to the beach, walking out on the what I wouldn't consider sugar white sand. It's a little more pinkish than sugar white. And digging down a few inches with their hands, they get nasty clumps of oil. It is just not true, at least not on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. These are areas that were hit by the slick, but the slick is gone now. So nothing to worry about there. As you are putting your emergency preparedness plans together, because you never know when one of these things is going to happen. And when it does, you could be one of the ones that makes it into Walmart first to pick up some supplies, but you could be faced with empty metal shelves when you go in there as well. Additionally, you could be faced with National Guard standing outside that facility. As you well know, the Red Cross has the ability within 2 hours' notice to close any retail outlet that they want and seize it, and then ration those supplies so that individuals don't go in there and walk off with truckloads worth of canned goods and then sell them at inflated prices or just take care of themselves while others suffer. So they say. Now, you
have the opportunity to take care of that well in advance and with much better product than what you're going to find at Walmart by visiting our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com. 1-800-PREPARE.com was set up by my friend Mike Faust and his firefighter buddies in New York after 9/11. They saw a great need to have a one-size-fits-all, one-stop shop for emergency preparedness. Those Earth Explorers that have visited this site, have purchased from this site, have written me and told me about the high quality, the excellent service, the excellent pricing that they received by purchasing at 1-800-PREPARE.com. On your way out of the checkout, make sure to put in my name, Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, and you'll get an additional 10% off. We encourage it. I have purchased the product myself, and I'm very pleased with the quality, the price, the shipping. Some of this stuff will last for 25 years. Talk about set it and forget it for a emergency preparedness plan. This is the way to go. I would start with a 72-hour kit, something to keep you going for 3 24-hour days. Usually in 3 days, you can get some kind of get to family, you can get to some kind of extended aid, you can relocate yourself. 3 days seems to be the critical time. When FEMA moves in, they're usually a day late and a dollar short. So you're already hungry. You already may have an infection from a laceration or a puncture. And if you had a good kit, you would not be a burden upon that system. You would not be the one hunkered down under a wet blanket on the curb waiting for someone to come and help you. You would be able to help others, and that's what it's all about. So visit our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com. Tonight we're going to talk about the South Atlantic anomaly. I've had some listeners tell me that I should be concerned about this, that I should talk about it. I agree, because we have discussed it in some level in our books, The Ark of Millions of Years, so I'm going to tie those in as well. We haven't talked about that subject in quite a long time on this program. And it's appropriate, because we just sent Volume 4 of The Ark of Millions of Years. Yes, there was plenty to write about, let me tell you, all of the earth changes and things that we listed in the first three books were accumulated, tracked, and those that have already occurred are now listed in this fourth volume so that you can keep up with it. So we're trying to keep up with it all, and we're trying to bring it to you in an organized way. And we're going to talk about the South Atlantic anomaly. So stay tuned. We'll be back in 40 seconds. And don't forget, we have a mystery guest that may call in tonight. And when he does, well, all bets are off. You may have to fasten your seatbelts. Anyway, be back in 40 seconds. Don't go away. We'll be back with more X Squared Radio. The South Atlantic Anomaly. It refers to an area where the Earth's inner Van Allen radiation belt comes closest to Earth's surface. This leads to an increased flux of energetic particles in this region, and it exposes orbiting satellites to higher than usual levels of radiation. The effect is caused by the non-concentricity of the Earth and its magnetic dipole. And the South Atlantic anomaly is the near-Earth region where Earth's magnetic field is weakest. As you know, we have a core inside of our planet that revolves at one rate. We have a crust that revolves at another rate, and this counter-rotation creates a very powerful magnetic field around our Earth. We call it the magnetosphere. outside of this, there is the Van Allen radiation belts. These are were once thought to be impregnable. Sending men to the moon was of great worry because traveling through the Van Allen radiation belts is hazardous enough. But once you get outside of those, the occupants of the craft, mostly made of aluminum, practically transparent to high energy particles and radiation, would be exposed to the raw fury of the sun. And fortunately, during all of the manned missions to the moon, they were either able to be on the opposite side of the moon, or the sun was very quiet at that time. And so the occupants of the Eagle spacecraft and various Apollo missions that went to the moon were not exposed to large amounts of radiation. But if they went during a high period of solar sunspot activity, they very well could risk being exposed to this high amounts of radiation. We're protected here on the Earth. We can walk around in almost nothing, or nothing if you like, and really live a quite long and prosperous life, even though we're exposed to the sun, because the Earth routes all of that fury around the planet because of this magnetic field. But where the South Atlantic anomaly is located, the magnetic field is weakest. And so these particles have a tendency to come through. This radiation comes through. Now, this is located off the coast of Africa. And it's something that has been well recognized. It's understood, but we haven't studied it that much. The Van Allen radiation belts are symmetric with the Earth's magnetic axis, north and south poles, which is tilted with respect to the Earth's rotational axis by an angle of 11 degrees. The intersection between the magnetic and rotation axes of the Earth is located about 500 kilometers, 300 miles or so, to the north, above the center of the Earth. Because of this tilt and translation, the inner Van Allen belt is closest to the Earth's surface over the South Atlantic Ocean, and farthest from the Earth's surface over the North Pacific Ocean. And it has effects not only on the Earth, but in low orbit. It is of great significance to this because, especially with astronomical satellites and other spacecraft that orbit the Earth at several hundred kilometers altitude, these orbits take satellites through the anomaly periodically because, you know, the Earth's rotating and the orbits aren't over the same real estate every single time. So it exposes them to several minutes of strong radiation caused by the trapped protons in the inner Van Allen radiation belt each time. The International Space Station, orbiting with an inclination of 51.6 degrees, requires extra shielding to deal with this problem. The Hubble Space Telescope doesn't take observations while passing through the South Atlantic anomaly. Astronauts are also affected by this region, which is said to be the cause of peculiar shooting stars seen in the visual field of astronauts passing through the South Atlantic anomaly is thought to be the reason for the early failures of the Global Star Network's satellites. You remember those early satellites. If you remember having a satellite dish, they had a lot of problems as those satellites passed through those areas, and they failed eventually because they didn't shield properly. The SAA, as its acronym is known, is growing, and it's spreading westwards from South Africa as the Earth's internal magnetic field rapidly weakens in this region. Now, this is of most interest, and why we want to discuss this tonight, because as you know, the North Magnetic Pole, discovered by my ancestor, Sir James Ross, in 1831, at great peril to him and his crew in 1831, is no longer in that location. It has been marching at an ever-increasing rate from there toward Russia. And now it is moving at the rate of about 25 miles per year. Yeah, that's across town, people. That's not 25 inches or 25 yards. That's 25 miles. That's a long way. Even when you're thinking about a planet that has a 21,000-mile circumference, plus or minus, 25 miles is significant. It means that the force, which is called the Coriolis effect, that pulls the pole perpendicular to the rotational coordinates of the Earth, is now picking up speed. And that is of great concern as we connect the dots with this South Atlantic anomaly. And we notice that the magnetic field is weakest in this area. To have inconsistencies in such a short span of time as a single lifetime of a man, for instance, compared to lifetimes of planets, 4.5 billion years old, means that the Earth is beginning to change rapidly. And I use the word rapidly kind of loosely. From a geological point of view, it's rapidly. From the lifespan of a man or a generation of men, perhaps it's still moving rather slowly. The interesting thing is that we are monitoring it. There is a global network of magnetic observatories, and there's a new station being built at King Edward Point that will allow better monitoring of the South Atlantic anomaly and of the changes occurring deep within the Earth. The key words, deep within the Earth. Due to the lack of land in the mid-Atlantic area, only Ascension Island, Tristan da Cunha, and St. Helena observatories currently provide monitoring of the magnetic field and its changes in this important area. So South Georgia sits within an area where this shield is weaker due to the weaker spot in the Earth's magnetic field known as the South Atlantic Anomaly. In this area, radiation from space penetrates deeper into the atmosphere, which can be a hazard to satellites, spacecraft, and also high-altitude aircraft. So, as the sun begins to crank up its solar cycle 24, which we're clearly in right now, we have the SDO, the Solar Dynamics Observatory, has recorded very recent and very spectacular solar flares and coronal mass ejections just since it's been launched, very recently, within the last year. Fortunately for Earth, most of these amazing visual events lashed out into space and missed Earth. They went out elsewhere. But odds are that sooner or later, one of those CMEs, one of those flares, is going to line up with Earth. This was predicted in the arc of millions of years. Where did we get it? Well, we got it from the Maya. The Maya were very good experts at recording their observations of the sun. They have in Teotihuacan a temple of the sun. It's a giant pyramid, rather large, I'm telling you. I didn't climb to the top of it. But at the end of the Avenue of the Dead, there is also the Temple of the Moon. All of these structures are arranged in stellar patterns. Now, if you get to the top of the Temple of the Moon, mind you, you're at 8,000 feet. You're climbing stairs that are a little like the worst stairmaster you can imagine, I'll put it that way. By the time you get to the top of this structure, I don't care how in shape you are, your lungs are going to be coming out of your mouth. It is really up there. When you're sitting on top of the Temple of the Moon, you could look around the ancient city of Teotihuacan, and you could see this for yourself if you go to if you purchase the Ark of Millions of Years series, we took our own photographs at Teotihuacan. So you can see what we're talking about here. And by the way, we went down there during a full moon, and the full moon is captured in several of the photographs in broad daylight. And it's quite spectacular. But one of the things you notice when you look around this city, if you look to the west, is you'll see dozens, literally dozens, perhaps hundreds of small pyramids covered in dirt. They look like little hills, but you can also see some of them have been recently excavated, partially excavated. Half of it's been uncovered, or a corner of it's been uncovered. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of these that have not been explored because they haven't been uncovered with the dirt. They have high winds down there in the desert, and the wind carries the dust, and the dust settles on the steps of the pyramid. Then it rains on them. Seeds begin to grow. Grass then grows, and then more dirt. And before you know it, you've got a little hill. And the local government is just not funded well enough to not only excavate all these and uncover them, but to keep them uncovered year after year, because the nature's constantly trying to take these things back. It's not the jungle. It's the dirt that just blows around down there, and it keeps covering it back up. So it's difficult to keep uncovered. It takes a lot of money, and if you have a chance to go down and see Teotihuacan, it's quite a drive from Mexico City, about a 6-hour round trip if you're going to go down there and back. It is not a trip for the lighthearted. A lot of walking, a lot of hiking. There are tour buses that go down there. I don't recommend it because you're going to get the tour bus tour. You're not going to see the areas of great interest. So we have thought about putting together a few expeditions down there and taking some people with us to show what we discovered about the Nephilim and various things about the jaguar cult that was down there. But I don't mean to birdwalk. I am getting to a point. The point is that the Maya gave us information about what was going to happen with the sun at the end of the age. Now, mind you, people, this was 1,500 years ago. This is not something local to them. It's not something that was going to happen, you know, the next weekend or the next generation. They knew it was going to happen in 2012. My friend Jose Arguez, who came on this program a few years ago and spoke about his as the Pakal tomb lid was discovered, he was allowed to see it as a young man, and has since deciphered it and really is the founder of the entire 2012 awareness. And Jose Arguez is still around. He doesn't give very many interviews, but he gave a wonderful interview on our program. You can go back in the archives and find it, and explained how this goes together and what Pakal, who had six toes and six fingers, and so did his son, who was a giant, way taller than anyone else around there, at least 7 feet tall, maybe taller. He had very detailed information about how the Earth was going to align with the galactic center, which was likened unto a vagina, this great dark rift in the Milky Way, and how this was the birth canal that the Earth came from. And we're going to discuss that as we get into the next hour, and into which at least part of the Earth is going to return. And one of the events that's going to occur, according to the Maya, is this conflagration. What does that mean? Well, it's a solar flare. It might be ordinary, it might be extraordinary, but it is going to be greatly enhanced by this gravitational alignment with the galactic center. Now, you have heard other astrophysicists, my friend Michio has often said that this alignment takes place every year and nothing ever really happens because of it. It is not really accurate, because this alignment does not take place every year. This alignment only takes place once every approximately 26,000 years after going through the precession, which is the movement of Earth's axis, our solar system, through the zodiac in the sky. In other words, the North Star changes from age to age. Right now it happens to be Polaris. It was once Draconis. And as we moved through the zodiac, which we see in the stars from our perspective, of course, the Earth is exposed to different forces, different energies, different frequencies. And right now we are ending the age of Pisces and we're beginning the age of Aquarius. Yes, it's been sung about, it's been pontificated about, it's been prognosticated and channeled, and, well, you get the idea. But this alignment is special because when it occurs that the sun is on the opposite side of the Earth from this rift in the Milky Way, obviously it's got to take place in a certain time of year because the Earth takes a year to go around the sun, that alignment is going to take place December 21st, 2012. That's also a key date in several other ancient civilizations, not the least of which is Stonehenge, but also in Egypt. That alignment is critical in when you set up those pyramids and take those measurements. That alignment makes sense as well. During this alignment, the sun will be on the opposite side of the rift in the Milky Way, which means if there is a flare during this time, that flare is going to be amplified. It's going to be drawn toward Earth more than it would be during a normal flare event. Now, we've had some devastating flares. We talked about this last week, the flare of 1859. The geomagnetic storm was so horrific that although we weren't really that high-tech of a society, we did have telegraph lines up, and the telegraph lines acted like a huge antenna picking up the charge and promptly setting on fire several telegraph offices because the transformers, the coils that generated the magnetic field that made the dots and dashes along the wire, could not handle that kind of voltage coming in. We estimate somewhere around 100,000 volts per meter coming in on that wire, coming in on coils that were made to hold something like 32 volts or 100 volts. Well, you could see what happened. This stuff got amplified into millions of volts and electrocuted people and set places on fire. Now, here we are not just a telegraph society anymore. We are definitely a microelectronics society. There are listeners to this program tonight that are listening on their iPods or their iPhones or their iPads. And, you know, we don't want that transmission to be interrupted now, do we? But I can tell you at 100,000 volts per meter, if we have a flare similar to the one that occurred in 1859, it's going to be devastating to our way of life. Everything from scanning groceries to filling up our cars to, our electronic watches, everything is going to be affected, not the least of which is our satellite network upon which we rely for navigation and communication and exploration. So if we have a flare like that, it's going to be quite devastating on that kind of electronics. If the flare is larger than that, and it's enhanced by this galactic alignment that we've been discussing, then what you're going to see is a solar conflagration. That is to say, the particles that reach Earth will be in a much higher energy state because they will not have dissipated. They will not have radiated their energy as they cross the 93 million miles from the sun to Earth. That solar wind will be greatly amplified, and the ability to penetrate the planet will be will be greatly amplified. This ties in with the South Atlantic anomaly because this is a weak spot on the Earth. This is a place that's kind of a window of opportunity for this energy to come blasting in to our planet. And that's what we talk about in the book. Now, it does sound like a lot of doom and gloom, and it is. And it's going to have other effects. So the people that are building these satellites, they say that we need to better relate observations of the South Atlantic anomaly made separately on the land masses of Africa and South America. The South Georgia Observatory will therefore be a key addition to this small network of observatories. We don't really know when this is going to go online, but we're going to keep you posted on it because a lot of money is being poured into this. A lot of attention is being put on this, and it's being put on it for a reason. In 2005, the Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 1, went on the market, went for sale. By March 10th of 2005, Volume 1 was a national bestseller. I honestly had no idea that there were so many people interested in this. And although the book was well written, it was written nonfiction. It was like a textbook. It really didn't tell a story, you know. But people bought that book, and they became empowered. And one of the theories that we purported in this book, as we compiled and interpreted multiple civilizations of studies and future looks at the Earth, we came up with the idea of the union of the polarity. Now, the union of the polarity is absolutely unique to the Ark of Millions of Years series. My co-author, E.J. Clark, and myself, we originated it. It is different. We've spoken about it all over the world to various audiences. I'd be happy to come and speak about it to your audience. So if you've got a venue, if you put together 10 or 20 people or 30 people, I'll go anywhere, anytime, and I will make a presentation to your people. And trust me, this is a marvelous 2.5-hour presentation on the origin and destiny of the Earth. All of the work is original. The compilations, we don't take any license with them whatsoever. We present them exactly as the original text, whether it's the Zohar or the Sefer Yetzirah or the Popol Vuh. We report it just as it was in there, and then we add the modern physics to it so that you can see it come alive. Then we connect the dots together because societies all over the world spoke about this. They didn't have a method of communication. They didn't travel to one another, and yet the message is intact. The precision and the results and the effectiveness of their observations cannot be refuted unless they're looked at one at a time, and then you say, oh, well, the Hopi really didn't know what they were talking about. Or, the ancient Chinese really didn't know what they were doing. Or, gee, they were just hunters and gatherers in this desert. They didn't have any knowledge. But when you start putting all the pieces together, you start connecting the dots, now you see a higher intelligence. You see even more ancient civilizations, like perhaps Atlantis or Lemuria, leaving records behind, a very in-depth study of stars and planets and rotational forces, and you have the perspective of multiple passes through multiple precessions. Hundreds of thousands of years of study compiled and handed on to the next generation, carved in stone, recorded in metal, recorded in crystal. Once these things are all tied together, then you have the union of the polarity. The theory goes like this. I'll give you the opening salvo of it, and then remember that our phone lines are open at 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515, and we have the possibility of our call-in guest who is who's going to help us study some of this and talk about it. And trust me, the energy is always great when he calls in. So don't go away. Stick with us. Here's the opening salvo. Once there were two earths. And they were a higher energy earth and a lower energy earth. I'll tell you what. Now, we might start this hour off fresh with this because we do have a caller on the line, and I want to go ahead and bring him in. Joe from Idaho, welcome to the program.
Hi, Brooks. How are you?
I'm fine.
Sorry. I hope I don't bother you too many times every week here.
No, you're
fine. I have a couple of questions because you had been talking about earthquakes and solar flares and stuff like that at first. So I'm wondering where you get your information from. I have right here a USGS seismic data, HEALEY 2, and it shows, and I have some questions on it. It shows seismographs from different places all over the world. The night that the thing happened in Japan, and the next day, in fact, they didn't refresh their site, the whole earth looked like it was shaking. All of these seismographs were black. And
Over 100 earthquakes in 24 hours.
Pardon?
I said there were over 100 earthquakes in 24 hours, and a third of them were over 5.0.
Well, I'm wondering a little bit of how to read these graphs, if you know what I'm talking about. Another one, and I wondered if you could explain that. Another one I get is from IRIS Seismic Monitor. It's IRIS.edu. An educational thing, evidently, and it shows specific locations and their magnitudes every day of what's going on. Red for today, yesterday is orange, yellow's the past 2 weeks. The earth's just loaded, and I'm wondering about the place that you're talking in the South Atlantic, if it's on a rift. It looks like there's a rift. There's a lot of older earthquake activity all the way around this bottom of the Atlantic plate and over, going over towards Africa and right up the African coast, the African west coast.
Right. There are rims, there are interfaces between the tectonic plates. And this is the biggest theory is that these tectonic plates subduct or go one under the other. And as they do, they build up these stresses. And as the stresses release, they cause these earthquakes. It's a fairly sound theory, except when you look at the way the Earth is pictured once these waves go through the Earth. But in 1996, they tied all these geological stations together into sort of one listening network, and it allows us to track the earthquake as it moves through the planet, as the vibrations move at the speed of sound through various media. Now, the graphs that you're looking at will show two things. One, they'll show the amplitude of the vibration. This is the up and down motion that you see on the graph.
Okay, well, there's different lines going up and down, and some of it I can tell is magma movements. Some of these are at the heavy movement of the needle is at the top of the graph. It shows the hours and the minutes of the hour, but I'm wondering what do the different lines from bottom of the seismogram to the top of the seismogram, if you know what I'm talking about there.
Well, I do, but I'm not a geologist, and I don't want to go into a lot of detail what they all mean, but there are different directions of the vibration. Some of them are shear waves, and some of them are parallel waves, and P waves and S waves. And then how they interact, how deep the quake was, whether it was an up and down or side to side quake, and what the frequency of it was. All of these things.
That's what I wondered, is the frequency. The other question I have is that I'm getting stuff from solar winds and flares from Solar IMG. Let me see. I think that's part of NASA. It's solarimg.org. It shows the sunspots and, or let me see,
Well, I use various sources.
Spaceweather.com. I also they show the how fast it's moving and the numbers of the spots and stuff. And I'm wondering if what
Spaceweather's
you
a place to start. It's a good place to start. I also use the SDO's website and get some information off of there. And not, you know, a lot of it's useful, but when I tie it all together, it just keeps listeners to this program abreast of what the sun is doing and what the possibility of risk is. And we've been doing it for years, and people ask me, oh, why do you even talk about that stuff? Because once you see that the trends are fairly flat, you know what an anomaly looks like.
Yeah.
And when it happens, then you've got 73 hours or so to tell people to get the heck out of town.
In fact, maybe more than that. I noticed that today's pictures of the sun, it looks like that what's coming as the Earth rotates, I don't know whether it was remnants of what was it, 1164, the one that let out the X-class flare, or 1157, something like that. It looks like there's something that's blasting off on the other side of the Earth, or the other side of the sun, that's coming around again. So,
right. Well, we've had a lot of close calls in the last 90 days. There have been some spectacular CMEs, and they've missed us.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess I wondered if there was any information you could give me, and I appreciate your time here. Thank you very much.
Nope. Thanks for the call. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go ahead and take listen to a little Miasma, and then we'll be back right after this. All right, don't go away, Earth Explorers. Second hour coming up. And welcome back to X Squared Radio, glad to have you here with us. We're coming to you live from southern Mississippi. Our AccuWeather window forecast about 76 degrees and clear outside. By the way, if you want to reach us by phone, you can always do that at 530-413-4511. You can also reach me on Skype. So if you want to text me on Skype, you don't want to have your voice on the radio, I understand that very well. But you can reach me on Skype. I'm at X2-Radio. And what we're going to discuss this hour is the union of the polarity in the arc of millions of years. By the way, if you're interested in purchasing those books, you, of course, can find them wherever fine books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million Borders, blah, 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 or you can buy them at our website at arcofmillionsofyears.com. That's A-R-K, like Noah's Ark, arcofmillionsofyears.com. Why do we call it that? Because that's what Noah called his ark. He called it the Ark of Millions of Years. If you buy it from our website, you can not only buy the books individually, but you can buy them as trilogies. And when Volume 4 comes out, we'll go back to all those people that have purchased those books, and we're going to give you a coupon, which allows you to buy at a discount Volume 4. Also, you will get Volumes 1 and 2 in audio form, and I am working on Volume 3 as an audio as well. So you'll have the possibility. You get the first two volumes, no problem. So if you're not a good reader, don't worry about it. I read those for you. And then you'll get Volume 3 as an audio later on this year as I finish it up. Volume 4 has already gone to the publisher, so it should be out in about 6 or 7 weeks. A little bit smaller book, but it covers a lot of the updates, that things that have occurred that we predicted would happen in the first three books, and gives you some insights on how to prepare more carefully, shall I say, more effectively for the coming years ahead. It's important that you have your dream out there, because I don't think we're going to make it without it. Yes, it is possible for us all to get out of this alive. So it can happen. In the first hour, we talked about the South Atlantic anomaly. And the reason that this was important is because it shows an indication where the structure of the Earth and its placement here in this solar system has, shall we say, a chink in the armor. It has a disharmony. It's as though not quite enough bubble existed to go around the entire planet. There was a hole in it. Well, that hole is beginning to change in shape, and it's beginning to enlarge. It is an area where the Van Allen radiation belt dips down close to Earth and gets close to the surface. It is a place where our surface of the Earth is exposed to radiation from space, because the magnetosphere is the weakest right there. The magnetic protection that we have on the Earth is not there. And that's important, because if we don't have it, that means that area becomes sterilized. And that's not what we want to have if we want to continue life on this planet. The union of the polarity is a theory that we uncovered in our research for the Ark of Millions of Years. And the theory goes like this. There were once two Earths. One was called the Higher Earth. It was made of matter, very similar to our current Earth, but vibrated at a much higher frequency. And it was located in a distance, a location far, far away from here. No, not far, far away, like that far, far away, but perhaps a different galaxy, perhaps the Sagittarius galaxy. As it passed through the Milky Way galaxy, it dumped off planets into various solar systems, and of course we lost some planets to them. The stories recalled in the Bible and other ancient records say that Adam through Noah, lived on this world, this higher vibrational matter world. And as the people there began to follow a more carnal nature, judgment came in the form of a flood. And this event is the most universally remembered and also the most controversial event in history. So what we have is the idea that the realization that a people lived on a planet that had a lifespan of 1,000 years or more. They were a large, wise, nonviolent people until Cain came along and murdered for profit. A lot similar to what we see going on in the world today. We see a lot of murder for profit going on. And the stakes are rather high. And those that are caught in the middle pay the price. To whom, I have no idea. And maybe we can talk a little bit about that. Who, what, or who, how things are being run. Who's in charge. Why does Wars R Us have such a great franchise on planet Earth? Well, as we uncovered this in Pakal, and we uncovered it mostly in the Maya, but also in other cultures, we noticed that this Earth, this once pristine kind of Garden of Eden Earth, was relocated. It was moved from where it existed in that distant corner of space, another galaxy, another dimension maybe, through a wormhole, which the Maya have a record of in the Museum of Anthropology. There are pictures of it in the book. In fact, if you read The Ark of Millions of Years, one of the things you're going to be fascinated with is there are hundreds of photographs and drawings and charts. You just don't get books like that anymore. Why? Because the publishers charge out the yin-yang for books with pictures in them. So publishers cannot pass that. Well, they don't know how to pass the savings. There are any savings available on to the author. The author simply can't afford it. If you put a book out there with 50 or 60 photos in it, you're looking at a $90 book because the publishers are going to charge outrageous rates to get that book into print. Well, fortunately, one of the co-authors, moi, was adept at publishing. And so I created print-ready PDFs. And I sent the print-ready PDFs, all paginated, all formatted, to the publisher, and all they had to do was print it. And that's why each volume of the Ark of Millions of Years has over 100 photographs, charts, and drawings in it. So you get the benefit of that. It's an awesome book to just sit and just read the illustrations, because you can see, oh my gosh, these people that lived 1200 BC knew exactly where the Earth came from, how it got here, when it got here, and when it was leaving again. So that Earth comes through a wormhole, ends up in this corner of space, and merges with this Earth, the Earth that's here. The Earth changes in diameter. The amount of water on the planet changes. The flora and the fauna, the plants and the animals, change on this planet almost overnight. Literally, within 7 months, the merging is complete. Everything settles down. Noah's ship comes to rest on a physical mountain on this planet. But the Ark of Millions of Years was not a boat. It was a planet. Earth was the Ark of Millions of Years. Earth brought the species to this planet. Earth met Earth through the union of the polarity. Now, I remember George asked this question on Coast to Coast one night. How can two forms of matter occupy the same space at the same time? How does that occur? Well, from our perspective, Earth is solid. We can stand on it. We can dig holes in it. We can drive on it. We can sail around it. It's pretty solid. But from an atomic point of view, Earth is pretty porous. In fact, a neutrino could travel through a light year of Earth's without hitting anything. There's a lot of space in the matter that makes up planet Earth. That being said, liken it to having a 5-gallon bucket full of glass marbles, full to the brim. Now you have another couple of gallons of water, and you pour the water into the bucket that contains the marbles. Guess what? It'll go in there. It'll fill in the space in between the marbles. Two forms of matter, one liquid, one solid, occupying the same space, the 5-gallon bucket, at one time. And that's what we have. We have a planet that has a vibrational life to it. This higher Earth, this what we call spirit matter, that fills in the space of the physical Earth, also known as the temporal Earth, and animates it, gives it energy. And as long as these two Earths are in harmony, that is to say, their frequencies are constructively interfering one with another, you have a somewhat symbiotic relationship. You have one sympathetically resonating with the other and back and forth, and you have a vibrant, living being called the Earth. No, I didn't stretch that too far. And it's not too difficult to understand two forms of energy or matter occupying the same space at the same time. Just look at the human body. You're largely made of dirt and water. I mean, sure, it's processed through a corn on the cob or a cheeseburger. It's processed through water that you drink or, you know, various things that you eat. But you're still dirt. However, you're not an animated, living, breathing, thinking, emotional, loving, desirous pile of chemicals. Far from it. You are a spirit being, spirit matter, living inside of physical matter. And you animate it. You pick them up and put them down. You have desires. You prefer to procreate. You live. And that's what I'm talking about. Earth is a living being because it has higher vibrational matter inside of the physical matter, just like the human being. Now, is it a single personality like you are, sitting out there thinking that you're the center of the universe? Maybe not. Maybe you just think you're a member of it, which is fine too. Or is it an accumulation of personalities? Is it a society of personalities that make up the Earth? We don't really know. What we do know is that this higher Earth, this higher vibrational Earth, has been merged with this physical Earth throughout the procession. It began when it began. The flood of Noah, well, 3800 BC or 38 million BC. It's hard to know. Different records tell different stories. Different spans of time are recorded different ways. We talk about all of them in the Ark of Millions of Years. We want to make sure points of view, all the facts, all the perspectives are put in books so that you, reader, can make up your mind how to be enlightened with this information. The bottom line is this. We are reaching a point at which this harmony is beginning to become dissident. We're reaching a point at which the notes are becoming a little sour. The two Earths are beginning to come apart. And this the symptoms of this separation are things like the South Atlantic anomaly, this hole in the magnetosphere, this weakness in what was once the perfection of the union of the polarity, is a symptom that the Earths are beginning to come apart. The movement of the North Pole toward Russia is a symptom that the Earths are beginning to succumb to the Coriolis effect. Now, I have a listener that's written in that says, Dr. Agnew, does thought animate this human form? That's a good question. Thought, I actually had a very deep discussion about this last night down on the Mississippi Gulf Coast with a couple of pre-med students. And we talked about thought, and we also talk about thought in the presentation that we make. Thought is probably the fastest thing in the universe. It is a form of energy. It is a form of conscious intent. It is sentience. One might think that a slug thinks, but not for very long. One might think that a dog has thoughts, or a fish, or a butterfly. Is it possible? Perhaps. I know dogs think. I know dogs plot. Yes. Yeah, that's what I mean. I said plot. They know that they're going to do something wrong. They know that you disapprove of the thing that they're about to do. And so they watch you. They make sure you're turned away. They make sure you're out of the room. And then they go for it. And then when you come back in, they look, who, me? That wasn't me. I don't know how that got dumped over. Those aren't my teeth marks. Yeah, dogs think, of course. But let's define thought a little bit more. Is it consciousness? Is it desire? Well, now, there you go. Desire is what really separates a sentient being. It's what separates man from angels. Angels have no desire. Do they have thoughts? Possibly they do. Of their own? I'm not sure. Because angels are only servants of another being, usually God. God gives a command, and the angel follows that order. He does not think, he does not desire, he does not reason on his own. God wants a society wiped out, the angel goes and kills them. And that's the way it is. He doesn't think about it. No mercy. He will wipe Sodom and Gomorrah down to the last mouse because he was ordered to do it. And there is no mercy. So there's no desire. When an angel has a desire, he is cast out because now he has become like man. So a thought, a desire, a self-awareness, we discuss this as the I am moment. The point at which consciousness, self, God, source, said, I am. I am. I'm not just knowing everything. I'm not just sitting here in some singularity, knowing everything, seeing everything. To me, with nothing left to learn, nothing left to discover, no tomorrow, because, well, there's no yesterday. It's all now. Gee, that doesn't sound like the place I want to go. I like the mystery. I like getting up each day and going, man, I wonder what I'm going to get done today. Don't you? Don't you wonder the same thing? Of course you do. I'd like to hear about those wonders. 530-413-4511 as we continue to talk about this. Yes, there are esoteric levels of this, of that, there is no doubt. But there is also the physical that's occurring around us. One clues us into the other. I have people ask me from time to time, oh, how do you know this stuff's going to happen? I mean, come on. I say, well, read the book. Or if you don't read the book, listen. because there are symptoms. There are things that are going to indicate that these things are going to happen. How do I know that? I don't. It was recorded by people who already had it figured out. Great engineers, great astronomers, great seers, as it were, wrote down what was going to happen. They said the seas would leave their bounds. They said that the earth would reel to and fro. They said that stars would fall from heaven. They said that a great conflagration would come from the sun and fry a portion of the earth. And so if you know that these things are going to happen, you can move out of the way. You can become part of the surviving sentience. In fact, if everyone will listen, everyone can move out of the way and everyone can survive. You see, the race of mankind has been to this precipice many, many times. The precession is only 26,000 years in between cycles. That's a pretty short amount of time when you get to think about it. If you don't believe me, why don't you pull out your high school graduation photo and look at it? Yeah, go ahead. Just go grab your yearbook, open it up to your name, look at your high school graduation senior picture. And now think about how much time has passed between then and now. Not much. Only a few minutes. Only a few minutes has passed. Life get away from you? Or did you enjoy it enough? Did you miss some parts? Did you spend too much time working? Did you spend too much time worrying? Were you in the right place at the right time and you enjoyed some of the bounty and wonder and beauty of life? Were you there when your kids were born? Or when they took their first step or said their first words? Or when they got married or when they had their first children? Were you there? You see how important all of these moments are that make up the few minutes of a mortal life? But you, my friends, are not mortal. You, your intelligence is eternal and has always been around. The energy that makes up planets has always been here. The idea that it's physical in this universe is a rarity. You know, 95% of the universe is unseen. Of course, that's from our perspective. From the other point of view, it could be a very bright and vibrant subconscious universe that's amazingly higher vibrational and inspirational, and it is 5% that they cannot access. It's fallen to a lower energy state called matter. Maybe we are the dark matter. Interesting thought. As this union of the polarity progresses, and you see these signs, these symptoms occur one after the other, you'll know that we're right. You'll know that we've accumulated this information and provided it to you to empower you so that you could put yourself in the right place, not out of fear, out of desire and out of love for the race, out of the desire to be present with the earth when we go through this transition. You don't want to be dead. You want to be alive. You want to be interpreting and feeling and sensing this universe through the biological transducer of a body while we're going through this, because it's here that time slows down. You see, if man were to embrace the spiritual aspect of God's gifts to him, would he be able to raise his vibrations or energies to overcome harm? Answer, yes. Yes. And we're not going to go into what God is or is not, or what church you do or do not believe in. That's irrelevant. What is occurring around you is proof that it's all true. the consideration that man and all of his thinkings and doings in the physical world might be the real dark matter is something upon which to ruminate. But I can tell you that we are capable of incredible godlike brightness. And it is possible that this union of the polarity can be manipulated. Because in the set of energy that makes up Earth, that makes up this solar system, the galaxy, in this set of energy is also your energy. Yes, individually it's small, smaller than a mustard seed to be sure. But in groups of a dozen or 100 or 1,000,000 or 1,000,000,000, it becomes formidable. The Earth must respond to this energy input from consciousness. There is no choice because it is a mathematical formula. All of the energy goes into the formula. It resonates constructively, destructively, interferes with itself. And what is the net result? Reality. Reality is the net result of that equation. So if you're going to put your consciousness into this equation, my suggestion is that you make that consciousness a positive one. My suggestion is that you listen to what is being said tonight about the union of the polarity beginning to become disharmonious. The two Earths are getting ready to separate. That separation cannot be stopped. It is a mathematical progression that must occur. It cannot be prevented. What can be altered is the style of that metamorphosis. Whether or not your energy resonates with the higher vibrational, shall we call it fifth dimensional Earth, or whether it vibrates with the dark energy of the temporal Earth and will remain as dark matter in the universe, is a choice totally up to you. There is no being out there in space who is going to pluck you out of your misery and say, you go to heaven, and grab someone out of the lap of luxury, a philanthropic, kind, loving person who happens to be a billionaire, and say, you go to hell. There's no being like that out there. The being is you, your energy state, your choices, your desire. The frequency at which you exist automatically judges you instantaneously. And it is your thoughts, it is your desires that set your energy state. It is that way with individuals, it is that way with planets, it is that way with galaxies, it is that way with any set of energy. Now, we have a unique situation because we have almost 7 billion conscious beings on the Earth at one time. Now, they're not all conscious that they're conscious. I've said that before. And that's why it's our job to reach them and to make them realize that they are conscious, to make them realize that their choices, their desires, their will does have an effect on the equation. They do matter. Now, how do we use this? That is a very powerful question. That's a great question. So, the key in this hour that I want you to realize is I want you to recognize it. I want you to realize and recognize the energy state of your existence. Do you exist in fear? Do you exist in jealousy? Do you exist in envy and rage? Do you wish violence or do violence upon your neighbor? Or are you merciful? Are you chaste? Are you Do you have charity one for another? Are you patient? Are you easy to forgive? Do you look out for the well-being of others? Do you help others to grow? I don't mean feed them every day. You're actually doing a disservice to them if you feed them every day, because you rob them of the ability to feed themselves. Teaching them to feed themselves is a much higher calling than simply pumping rice and milk down their throats every day. You perpetuate and enable their misery. You rob them of their dignity and their sovereignty, and no human can withstand that. How can it be turned? We're going to discuss that in the final hour. The important thing is to remember that is to realize that it can be turned. So the vibration that you feel, it is emotional, but is it emotion? Is it the actual emotion that you feel? Probably not. Because the emotions that you feel are influenced by a lot of different things. They're influenced by the music that you listen to. Ah, vibrational energy. They're influenced by the pictures that you look at. Ah, visual information. It's once been said by a wise philosopher, if you control the eye, you can control the mind. There are really only three sins, you know, sins. Missing the mark, not becoming this being that we're talking about. It is the lust of the eye. That is to say, oh man, I wish I had that car. I won't be satisfied until I'm making $1 million a year. I want a big house. I want this and I want that. The lust of the eye. The lust of the flesh. I don't need to go into that. You know what it is. And the pride of life. These are the three great weaknesses of man. It is what separates us from the angels. It is what gives us the potential to be gods ourselves. Without these three weaknesses, you cannot become the being that you were born to be. Overcoming them is perhaps one of the greatest purposes of life. Now, there are other things that can affect your emotions. And by the way, there's no such thing as a chemical imbalance. I just want to get that out there. Okay? If you've been told you have a chemical imbalance, you've been fed a line of crap. There's no such thing as a chemical balance. The body is a chemical factory. It makes hormones and enzymes, proteins by the millions, pumps them throughout the body, the combination of which affects the way you feel, the amount of sugar in your blood system, the amount of endorphins in your brain, the amount of serotonin that you uptake or don't uptake. All of these things affect emotion. And the balance of these, nobody knows what it's supposed to be. It's different for every single being. About the only thing we have consensus on is what blood pressure should be. I can tell you, people that suffer from hypertension, and we don't really call it suffering, they've been diagnosed with hypertension, is that when their blood pressure is up, that is to say, you know, 180, 190, 200, they feel pretty good. I mean, they feel pretty good. You can run fast. You can make love for hours. You can think quickly. You can speak quickly. You're clear of mind. You're fast. And when it's normal, say down around 140 or 120 over 70, you feel like you're slow and sluggish. The older you get, the worse that gets. As you get older and they try to keep that blood pressure in that normal range, because you don't want to blow out a blood vessel, cause leaking everywhere like a stroke or an aneurysm and die, because the blood vessels have become weakened and hardened and have different bubbles and lesions in them, as you lower that blood pressure, you lose the ability to do a lot of things. And you know what I'm talking about. You stand up quick, you get lightheaded. You try to run great distances, you can't do it. You try to think clearly. What was that? Gosh, I just had that in my mind. I hate when I do that. You see what I'm saying? All of this has to do with the physiology, not the soul inside. The spirit inside the body forgets nothing. The physical body, the combination of this spirit and body, that's where the interface problems occur. Because the spirit remembers everything for all time and eternity. You have all of those memories in there. You just can't access them. You've been told you're not supposed to access them. You've been told they're impossible to access. They don't exist even. And so you don't go looking for them. So, the physical body doesn't really have memories like that. Memory, thoughts, desires, personality isn't stored in the physical body. There are lots and lots of case studies where human beings have been diagnosed as having little or no brain. Now, I know you know people that don't have any brains, but I'm talking about the physical organ, the brain. Hemispheres are gone, or the brain is a fraction the size that it's supposed to be, or in some cases, the brain is just a lining of gray matter on the inside of the skull. The skull's largely liquid, okay? And yet, these individuals are brilliant, off the charts with intelligence. It's because intelligence, the desire, the personality, the drive, the being isn't stored inside the brain. It's stored outside. It's where you exist. You are just animating the physical being. And so it is with planets as well. This union of the polarity is a combination of this physical matter and this spiritual matter occupying the same place at the same time, creating this amazing planet with amazing, vibrant life. Everywhere there is a void on this planet, it is teeming with life. Plants and animals, bacteria, fish, complex life forms, social structures, complex ecologies exist in every void and every clime of the earth. And it is because this energy of the earth is driving this creation. It is driving the procreation that makes up this planet. One of my listeners is now in the rainforest. She is a rainforest researcher. And she's invited me down there to climb around the canopy of the rainforest. I have no idea if or when I will ever accept because I have too much going on. Oh, you have no idea. But the idea is fascinating that there's someone out there who's in the jungle, in the rainforest, studying the most amazing pharmaceutical factory on the planet. The cure to every disease, the treatment to every infirmity exists in the rainforest. So we shouldn't be about cutting it down. It's not really a great source of oxygen for the earth. You know, mature old trees don't generate any oxygen. Only young, growing, vibrant trees generate oxygen. The sea is the source for all life, all oxygen on the earth. The rainforest has very little contribution to that. But the variety of species that exist there, not only on a microbial level, but on a complex level, is like off the charts. It is the earth of dreams. It is what was the planet that Luke Skywalker went to that he met Yoda? Somebody out there knows that answer. Text that to me really quick. I can't remember it because I'm thinking about something else. But that lush green planet full of life force is what Earth is. Whether you go to the Antarctic and look at the frozen wastelands, you'll find life there. Under the ice, you'll find life there. In the jungles, in the seas, in the mountains, in the trees. Wow, that kind of rhymes. And even possibly inside the Earth. Where there is a void, there is life. And now that life exists on this earth and can communicate one with another. As we come together in pairs and groups, as we move about the planet and meet our soul mates, you'll find them. Now we're communicating better than ever. Ah, that's right. Dagobah. Dagobah was the planet. Right. Thank you very much. That was the planet where Yoda was, that Luke Skywalker visited as everyone else was going to Alderaan. Not Alderaan. The planet where the Ewoks were. So as all this comes together, we realize that we are an integral part of this, but not as individuals. You realize that we come here to Earth, and we have our own struggles, we have our own weaknesses. We also have the other side of the coin. We have the one person that makes up the pair to us. You know, as consciousness began to divide itself through the square root function in the universe. The square root is two equal numbers multiplied by each other, separated. One is yin, one is yang. One is male, one is female. One is a positive spin, the other a negative spin, relative to the other, not negative. The bringing together of these two back together creates the God, creates the one being. Jesus spoke about it. He found his Mary. They were one. And there are other great couples that came together from time to time, and it was rare. Why? Well, because it was hard to communicate. It was hard to reach out there. You couldn't find them. My goodness, it wasn't like, hey, I went on vacation down to the Suez and I found my soulmate. Now, we have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have all kinds of social networks. And, you know, it's an astounding phenomenon. And it's just really now being studied. I'm looking for some books or some studies to come out and see how this happens. How Facebook has upset a lot of the relationships that are already there. Oh, my goodness, the divorce rates are higher than ever. And so many people are now not considering marriage. They're just kind of coming together in whatever cohabitative arrangements. But in reality, what's happening is as people reach out there all around the world, they're able to find in very short order the people with whom they are compatible. And that compatibility is something that we have never seen before. That compatibility is something that is gelling in a single lifetime. And whereas the network didn't exist and now it exists, you had relationships that existed that were probably relationships of convenience or proximity. Well, I was raised here. I went to school here. I met her in high school, blah, blah, blah. My parents, my aunt, my cousin, whatever. But now we're reaching out to other countries, other societies, other states. We're finding people that we knew when we were kids that we got separated and now we're back together. And you're seeing the soulmates come together more and more. And And as they come together, the great power of these couples is being manifested. I was going to say released, but that's not really the case, because it isn't being released. It's being focused, and it's showing up in our society as points of light, great points of light. You know, it was once said, behind every great man is an astonished mother-in-law. But that's not really the case. Beside every great man is a great woman. And likewise, beside every great woman, there is a great man. This is the way it has always been. It is unnatural for us to be separated in this way. It's unnatural for us to be individuals walking blindly through society, growing old and dying. It is more natural for us to be together, to work as teams, to work as, I was going to use the word couples, but perhaps the more accurate way to say it is as teams, soulmate teams. And the reason I think this is important is because it gives great purpose to life. And that purpose is so powerful. And as these two separate energies come together into a combination of energies, which are now we just called a team, the collective energy is much more powerful than the two individuals were separated. So that's important because the planet is now accumulated an energy set of about 7 billion beings, and approximately a third of those beings are now gelling together in these higher energy relationships, because soulmates are coming together. Teams of beings are coming together and working together and creating greater things than they could separately. And so although we have a fixed amount of beings, plus or minus, in the energy set, the actual form of the energy, the frequency of the energy, is changing. It's changing because the consciousness of these beings combined together can vibrate higher, can vibrate brighter and more powerfully than it can separately. And so the entire planet begins to shift. The consciousness of the planet shifts, and that is the mathematical, not the experiment, no. It is the mathematical formula of the race of mankind on this planet. And once we figure that out, according to the union of the polarity, the shift will occur and the race will divide once again. Only this time, a very large faction of the race will go on. Not just a few souls like before, not just 8 souls on a planet, maybe 8 billion souls on a planet. This makes a big difference as planets move through dimensions. This is the great thought of the union of the polarity. This is the male-female yin-yang vibration that brings the glory to the existence of mankind. It's what I want you to think about as we go into our third hour. Hopefully, we'll get our mystery guest on, and we're going to have an exciting discussion in the last hour. Phone lines are open, and we will be back right after this, as we take a short break on X Squared Radio.
Thank you.
We're glad you're here with us on X Squared Radio. Third and final hour on this gorgeous spring night. Many Earth changes happening around us. We're discussing the union of the polarity. In this hour, we're going to try to get our mystery guest to join us. He has been quite busy making preparations and giving deep thoughts to upcoming events. So he may not make it, but we're going to try. If you're a reader of Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, you can get this book by going to rememberingthefuturebook.com. You'll get the audio version for free if you go there and purchase from that site. You may also want to participate in the meditation that goes with it. It's called the Flower of Life Meditation. And it is originated by Drunvalo Melchizedek, and I took the class from him, and took advanced classes from my teacher, Maureen St. Germain. I recommend her CD, her audio CD, to go along with your learning of the meditation. It's called the Merkaba 2 Meditation, and it will guide you with an audio track through the meditation and allow you to master it the way we have. It's important because it's a meditation for busy people. 17 breaths and you're in. If you would like to pick up this CD, there's a couple of ways of doing it. You can go to the website at rememberingthefuturebook.com and click on the Merkaba 2 CD cover. This will take you directly to her website and allow you to purchase the CD there. You can also just go directly to MaureenSaintGermain.com and find the CD in her online store. She has many very fine products, and she puts on a very, very good training seminar. It's very affordable. She moves it around the country, so it's just about every country, every state, and you'll have an opportunity to get a hold of that that meditation training. I highly recommend it. We have tried to put together a meditation training seminar to go with the book, but we couldn't get enough participants to actually have it. So if you're interested in doing that, however, you can write me, and we will be happy to come to your area and do the training. So if you're interested in having me come and speak about the book, and it's a really great presentation. I'm not being prejudiced here. I'm just telling you that it's a 90-minute audio-visual experience about remembering the future, the physics of the soul and time travel. It's free. I give the talk free. All you have to do is cover the basics, like the travel there and room and board and give me some place to sell books and movies, and you've got me. So if you want to have the workshop, it's very inexpensive. You can go to xsquaredradio.com, click on the speakers link there where it says I will come and speak at your event, and the rates are right there. They're very inexpensive. I think it's $20 or $25 or something like that. It's just ridiculously cheap. Why? Because I'm not doing this for a living, people. I have a living. I'm doing this because I want to get the information out there. The only reason we put any cost in it at all is so that you will have a sense of value to it, and it pays for the 55-page workbook that you get as part of the workshop. We want you to have the information because I have this mission that I'm trying to accomplish. And that is to get the information in your hands so that you can take charge of your own life condition. So I don't charge anything for the talk. I only charge for the travel, and actually you take care of that, whether you want to fly me there or pay for my miles to drive there if it's close enough. I'll come there. I'll speak for free. You can make whatever money you want to make off of it as long as you feel like you're being honest in your business dealings. I'm cool with it. The only thing I ask is if we have the workshop, I think it's $20 or $25 that I get to pay for the 55-page workbook, and that's about it. And we can do it all in one day, or we can do it in 2 days. We can do one seminar one day on the Hollow Earth, and the next day we'll do it on Remembering the Future book, and we'll do a two-hour workshop after that. And you'll have a marvelous weekend, and you could charge, I don't know, $100, whatever, to get local people to come into it, and you can make a little jingle, pay for the venue, and I would love to do it. And believe me, no group is too small. I have spoken to groups as small as 9 and groups as large as 1,400. So I enjoy them all. Don't think that I'm too busy. Weekends are weekends, and if you want me to come out there and speak, just go to the website at xsquaredradio.com and contact me, and I'll be happy to come out and speak at your venue. So the book has spread far and wide. I'm totally amazed that the Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, is now in 11 countries. I'm amazed at how many copies I shipped to Australia, to Sri Lanka, to, just all over the place. The book is resonating with a lot of people, and it would do a lot more if those of you that have read the book would actually go to Amazon, go to Barnes & Noble, and write a review, okay? Go to them, take 5 minutes, write your thoughts on the book, what you thought about it, and it could help the book sell, especially if the reviews are positive, which I hope they are. It would also help if you would get a few of your friends together and see if you could pull together a salon. We can do the talk in someone's living room, in a barn, in an auditorium or a library. Some of these venues are free. You can get them for free for outside speakers to come in. So do a little research, see what you can do. I'm happy to be of service. So just go to xsquaredradio.com, click on the Have Me Speak at Your Event, and we'll go from there. By the way, one of my listeners writes in and says, just love the CD from Maureen St. Germain. Put it on my iPod and use it once or twice a day. And he says, your book is wonderful. And I thank you so much for that, Chris. Thank you very much. He sends me good information we use on the program live, which you can do too by going to Skype and looking me up at X2-Radio. There's only one. And you can write me chats and texts during the program. I will get them, and we'll talk about them live on the air. And you can even tell me if you want your name mentioned. That's fine. If you don't, that's fine too. Now, one of the things that we talked about in the last hour was this high vibration that we're supposed to reach, that we're empowered to reach. If you listen and read and realize that you are this sentient being with this great power and opportunity as a mortal being, having desire and having thoughts. And one of my listeners wrote in and said that, is this a little bit like, wait a minute, let me just scroll up a little bit because there's one sentence here put so well. So is this division what many fundamentalists are saying is the rapture? Well, this division, or this coming apart of the union of the polarity, has in fact been likened by some readers to the rapture. Now, the rapture, I have to tell you, really doesn't exist in the scriptures, okay? It was made up. It is artistic license taken with one of the books in the Bible. Now, it stems from one verse in one book of the New Testament where it talks about being taken up into the clouds, where Paul is writing. He describes this as being taken up into the clouds. Well, people, the word rapture comes from the root word enwrapped, or to be in ecstasy. Now, this can be a little bit like a rock concert, okay? It's a little bit like flailing your arms around and thinking that you're high. But the idea is that you're going to be taken up out, and this was a definitely a latter day addition to the scriptures. This has become the subject of, well, the goal. Hang on a second while I write this. Okay. This has become the subject of the goal of a lot of fundamentalist religions. I have to tell you, they write back and say, so according to the fundamentalists, only the church, church attendees are going to be raised up. Yes, that's exactly right. It says, the rapture says good people, God-fearing people will be raised up to heaven, not necessarily spiritual people. Yes, that's true. I would add that these religions are the traditions of men. They weren't in the scriptures. They weren't built by Jesus. Nothing was ever said about that by him, by the way. And it's interesting to note, or to take note of, which God they should be fearing in order to get this rapture going. Because there are a variety of gods. There are a variety of Christs. There are a variety of churches. Oh, boy, don't even get me started there. And depending on which one you belong to, and sometimes it's which corner of the church you belong to. You know, some churches go by the same name, but they're Southern and Missionary and Free Will and First and Third and General. And my goodness, they all believe different things. Okay, so that's where we're at. We're in this tremendous struggle between religion and spirituality. And where the rub comes is that there are those of us out there trying to do something spiritual, give ground, give sanctuary to something spiritual, and yet the religious are there planting both feet in the dirt, leaning back on the rope, trying to stop that spirit from happening. And my special guest tonight probably knows that better than any man alive. He's a close brother of mine. We have become great friends over the years. Spoken many times at his venue. And I actually was born at his sanctuary in Trout Lake, Washington. Please welcome James Gilliland to X Squared Radio. How are you, James?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I know you're in a little bit of rainy, snowy weather up there and getting ready for things to warm up and have spring and make some plans for the year. But, you know, the Earth is going through some tremendous struggles right now. Earth changes are happening so rapidly that the news stations can't even keep up with them. They don't have enough theme songs to go with everything. And you're beginning to feel those changes, too.
Yeah, definitely. What's interesting is, both of us actually have been talking about these changes and coming and, you know, moving into alignment with the galactic core central and the Earth's fields going down, the coronal mass ejections, the solar cycle 24. And back in 1982, I wrote about all of this happening, and it's in the books, and now we're experiencing it. But what I've seen lately is that, you know, this is no longer prophecy. This is science and statistics. You know, it's gone out of the prophecy field, and now it's like happening. It's in your face, and we can't deny it.
Well, that's true. And, you know, I haven't really been into a church to hear what's being preached lately, but I can can see the results of it. I see their grip loosening on those beings that are now becoming aware of what's going on. They're becoming enlightened. And my goodness, you've had tens of thousands up there in the last 20-something years. But now now the forces are coming to a head. You've got municipal forces, you know, trying to, you know, shut down the sanctuary. And, you know, this is a really dark and nefarious effect on the consciousness of our world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite interesting. I see this as the microcosm of the macrocosm, and they are doing everything they can to clamp down. And you know, we had several meetings with the Planning Commission and with other people as well. It was pretty amazing going in there and watching them stand up. And I thought I was in Nazi Germany, basically, with these people and grilling me and making false statements and accusations and character assassinations. And you know, after listening to this for a while, we had one of the members recused because he had an agenda going and he was spreading rumors all around town. The problem with the whole town up here loves us. They love what we're doing. The whole town was impoverished. Nothing was going on up here. It was becoming a ghost town. A lot of the stores were closing up. The hardware store closed in the beginning. Everything. It was terrible. And then people started coming up to attend some of the functions and gatherings here and to watch the UFOs, which come on a regular basis to the area. And all of a sudden, the economy just started picking up, and everybody started doing well. And I thought it was amazing, even though there is a strong Baptist contingency here, we haven't really gotten any flack from them other than, you know, the usual rumors and things like that, which they seem to create. But, you know, there was not one letter of a negative nature sent throughout all this. You know, we had to post that we're having a meeting, what we're doing here, everything with the Planning Commission, because they told us that we have to have, you know, all these permits and conditional use permits and all these things. And we went through all their hoops, paid all the permit fees, everything, and they still refused to give them to us. So it got so ridiculous that we actually recorded the meetings. And in the meetings, it was, you know, I just said straight up, I said, I just want to make this very clear. You're saying we don't have the right to privacy. We don't have the right to assembly. We don't have the right to practice our spiritual practices. And you're saying we also don't have the right, the freedom of speech. I said, what you're saying is that none of these rights come with the ranch. You know, as long as we're on the ranch, we can't do practice any of our base constitutional rights. And they said yes, you know, basically, you know, they said yes. And so we finally had to get an attorney to deal with this. We had to hire a pretty good firm to go against this. And we did. And then I spent quite a few out-of-pocket money to actually put a block on that to get their program stopped on what they were doing. Because they wanted us even off the land, you know, the stuff they were saying. They just wanted us out of here. And so I got spent that money. And then finally, what's awesome is that we put a link up on I think it's GoFundMe, and it's under eSteady on GoFundMe.com. And we asked people that have been to eSteady, which have been in the thousands of people that have come here, and you know, had incredible awakening and healing processes going on, and had, you know, marvelous speakers like yourself have come up and educated people. And so we're just blown away by the support that we got. As soon as we put that link up, you know, within hours, we were a third of the way there of what we needed, and we're already three quarters there. And we're really hoping that's all we need to ask for. I think we're going to fill it here pretty soon and have our needs met for the first round of all the attorney stuff that we have to deal with. But in a way, we're kind of making a stand here for everybody, and the whole community is just fed up. And what I've seen, like I was saying, this is a microcosm of governing factions that do not listen to the people, do not care what the people want or need, and are in direct opposition to any kind of growth whatsoever, and financial growth, spiritual growth, anything. It's like they are so out of touch with the people that it's just, we don't know whose agenda they're running or what agenda they're running or who's pulling the strings. It's unbelievable. It has absolutely nothing to do whatsoever with what the people want. And we're seeing that in the macrocosm as well. We saw it with the bankster bailouts. We're seeing it with these wars, these endless wars we're getting involved in. We're seeing it with the UFO cover-up, all these things. Things are in the high 80s, 90-plus percentage when they do polls, saying people are saying, no, don't. We don't want these wars. We don't want to bail out the banksters. We don't want – we're in the cover-up, really high numbers. But this continues. So basically, I'm just saying we're just the microcosm of the macrocosm and making a stand here. And it seems like that stand – is now going global, where people are just saying enough, it's like, what happened to serving the community? What happened to doing what's right? What happened to honesty, integrity? The base values are just gone. And I think that's what we're seeing. And they're getting the big global lessons with the nuclear meltdowns and the misuse of HAARP and the psychotronics and all these other things we're seeing. We're getting a much bigger lesson in that arena. So, like people say, basically there's a scientific oligarchy that's behind all this nonsense, and then there's just a few families above that are pretty much terrorizing the world and creating all the manufactured lack and the reckless greed and the big disasters that we're now seeing.
Well, that's exactly right. Even when I see the publications that come out, like magazines that come out, one example I can think of is Energy and Capital magazine. It basically goes out to investors all over the world and tells them, of upcoming trends, where to put their money, And what they've been talking about the last 6 or 8 months is fuel, oil is getting ready to skyrocket, so invest in oil stocks and here and there. And what they're doing is they're encouraging these barons to make money, profits off of these events that are occurring. And whether we're talking about well-organized, well in advance protests against governments, and trust me, this is not something that people just made up their mind last Saturday they were going to go protest the governor in Wisconsin, for instance. These things were published months ago in union magazines that these guys were going to go and try to topple these new thinkers in government that are like James. They're trying to free up the lock that these organizations have on the people, to let the people be free and to work and to create jobs and prosperity. James has created a lot of prosperity up there in Trout Lake. I've been there. I've seen it. Last year, through a joint effort of a lot of people, that event sold out. It sold out. They couldn't take another person in that event. So this is how it's grown. And it's gotten to the point where it's almost reached critical mass, where consciousness is going out and it's shifting the consciousness of the planet. Well, that's not what these robber barons want to have happen. They want everybody to be subservient. They want these Wars R Us companies to prosper and to keep going, to keep people fighting just enough so they can make money off both sides. Organizations like James's, ESETI, are trying to enlighten people, to let people know violence is not the way, that we are not alone here, that we have a much greater, higher mission as members of the human race.
Yeah, it's interesting that this is such a threat. And I asked him, I said, well, I'm trying to understand. So basically, what is the big threat here? you know, we've operated 25 years, no accidents, nobody's gotten sick and died or ill here. And I said, let's measure our track record to your track record, to the county or city track record, and see how you're doing. And also, too, that, I mean, there's no threat here whatsoever to anyone or anything. And all we're doing is educating and healing people here. So I mean, if I'm this big, nasty tyrant, you know, or whatever, or evil person, or you know, Satan worshiper, all these other things that they are throwing through their head, it's amazing they don't even come out and look and see what's happening here. And, you know, we've had masters appear here. We had Mary appear here. Actually photographed her during some of the classes and the gatherings. We've had Kuan Yin appear here, Ezekiel, some of these other, you know, awesome beings that are universal in nature are in total support of what's happening here. And most of the local community has no problem with it. We have a great support, you know, from the extended family of East Seti. You know, and what's also, too, very powerful here is everything we do here is self-empowering. There is no guru worship here. There's no icon that people have to bow. It's all bending you inward to make your own personal connection. And you know, it's really interesting. I see that's what the big threat is. The big threat is that we are becoming very successful at what we're doing. People are waking up. They're becoming empowered. You know, it's just amazing healings are going on. So basically we're, you know, a lot of the churches and these other people are kind of looking bad because, you know, when the miracle healings start showing up and the masters start appearing and they don't, doesn't happen within their confines or their organization, then, you know, it becomes a threat. And the reason it doesn't appear in their confines of their organizations is because of their division or separation game, you know, that they're playing there. Like, you know, we're the chosen ones, or our way is the only way, or our way or the highway. And a lot of judgment, and a lot of fear, and a lot of guilt and unworthiness programs going there, which is exactly why it's not happening within some of the major religious confines. But I'm seeing that splitting now that even in the churches, I know a few years ago I was in Canada doing a talk with the head of the Greek Orthodox Church. Somebody's there from the Catholic Church. There was a guy there from India. All the heads of these people, we're all on a panel together. And they asked the big question, like, what? Nobody's coming to our churches. You know, what's going on? We have a 70% reduction in people in attendance. And, you know, the basket's not getting filled, and we can't pay for our churches and the other stuff going on. And they're really upset about it, and they're trying to find a solution for it. And I was on the same panel, and when they asked me, I went, oh, my God, you don't really want to ask me that question, you know. And so I did. I told them, I said, well, I turned around, I said, well, what is God? Like this to them, and they all just kind of looked at each other and looked at me, and I didn't really get an answer. And I go, well, wouldn't you say God is love? And they said, well, yeah, you know, God is love, you know. And I said, well, where's the love? Where's the love in your church? You know, where? I said, it's not about repeating scriptures. A parrot can do that. It's not about, you know, using fear and guilt and unworthiness to get people to come to church. It's all about being of loving service to the community. And I think the churches have forgotten what they're created for, is to help people make their own personal God connection and to serve the hungry, you know, and the poor and whatever, to be of service to those who are going through hard times. And I said, I think that's your main problem. I said, I also think that you should be having a lot of the women come forward in your church, because they're the ones that are connected to the source through feelings, because God is a feeling and God is love. And allowing that love to flow through them will turn your organizations around, and getting back to what you're founded on would also turn these organizations around. And often you could hear a pin drop. I mean, nobody said anything, and then the nuns stood up and started clapping.
Wow, that's amazing.
They loved it. They just.
I've often told people when I came up there the first time, I was like a fish out of water. I'd never spoken publicly. This is my first book that I'd written. I mean, I'd spoken about technical things, but I'd never made a presentation like I was going to make there. So I was a little nervous. And I really didn't understand when you said it was a sanctuary. I thought it was a sanctuary for the ETs, you know, where they could come and not have to worry about being shot at or something. But I realized after 3 days of being up there that the sanctuary was for us. So we could come there and we could discover that not only are we not alone in the universe, but who we really are. I mean, remember who we really were and are. It's a sanctuary for us so that people don't say we're crazy there. And it's just
Well, it's very sad. What's happening is that we're not just a body and a personality, and we're not supposed to be this, I hate to say it, but neutered zombies that they'd like us to be, you know, with all the chemicals and the water and the food and everything else.
Sure. And
there's so much more to it. I mean, we're these immense, vast beings. We're multidimensional beings existing on a vibrational continuum. And, you know, there's an old saying, you know, we are the ones we've been waiting for. Basically, we are the ETs we've been waiting for, because as souls, the ETs have already landed. They've already come in. They've incarnated, and they're here to help turn this planet around. But a lot of them are walking around asleep and forgot, you know, where they came from, their roots. You know, they have gotten trapped in this personality and body and all the programs of social consciousness, and they're waiting for their TVs to tell them what to do and who they are and what to buy and, you know, how to get the beautiful, you know, bronze woman, you know, by buying the right beer and driving the right car. And they've just been totally hypnotized into that program. And I think there's going to be a huge wake up here. And, you know, some of these disasters we're going through are just that people are snapping out of it and going, whoa, wait a second, something is really not right here. You know, what's going on? And now we're seeing.
I graduated first in my class in that program. So when I arrived at James's, I was 52 years old. I was old and I was asleep, and I woke up there my first time, and I remembered who I was, and I'm younger now than I was then. And
I can validate that, because everybody I know that has seen you, when they first saw you, they all say the same thing. They said, what happened to Brooks? You know, he all of a sudden he lost all this weight. He's got this light around him. He's like glowing. He's all blissed out and happy. You know, and they're always asking me what happened to you. They said you look 10 years younger.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I wore glasses. I had asthma. I took high blood pressure medicine. I weighed, I don't know, 252 pounds or something like that. I didn't lose the weight over months. I mean, I lost the weight that weekend. It was like I dropped like 16 pounds in 3 days, and I couldn't lose a pound for years before that. I just was old and fat, and, you know, I couldn't breathe, and I couldn't exercise, and it was terrible. And even my kids, who have been around me their whole lives, told me when I got back on Monday, who are you? You know, you changed that day. And now it's been, what, how long has it been? 5 or 6 years. I haven't changed back. Why would I go back to sleep?
Yeah, it's a life-changing. So many people have had just phenomenal life-changing experiences here at the ranch. And I think that's why we're getting so much support, you know, with keeping the doors open you know, hopefully we can put this whole nonsense to bed shortly. But it's still, I mean, the rules and regulations and the hoops that they're demanding that we jump through are just next to impossible. But, you know, we are going to do the best we can, but we are going to have to set some boundaries in certain areas and say, you know what, you haven't asked this of anybody else, and that's discrimination. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting how it all turns out, but But I've never seen anything before, and I knew before I walked in there what was going to happen and how it was going to unfold. But I knew I needed to walk through that door. And, you know, it wasn't fun getting grilled up there by these guys, but I swear I felt like I was in some Nazi tribunal. And I'm going, whoa, wait a second. Okay, make a list of all the evil, nasty things I've done, you know, before you come at me like that. You know, so, you know, and apparently they didn't have any. You know, they didn't have anything at all. But, you know, it's just the old guard struggling, fearful, knowing they're going down, knowing, you know, the world as we know it is not going to be the same here very shortly, and just their last shot at you know, maintaining control of a very tyrannical, controlling, suppressing system.
Well, it is, and there is revolution everywhere, and I know that there are forces out there trying to seize ownership of the revolution. I know the news organizations are trying to assign some great nefarious leader to this revolution that's occurring everywhere. It's occurring everywhere, all over the world, in London, in Libya, in Yemen, and everywhere. And, you know, people are trying to say, oh, it's the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, taking over the world. And I don't see it. Come on. I got friends that live in Egypt, and I was in Egypt not too long ago, and I didn't see that.
Uh-huh.
What they're reporting is disinformation.
Oh, 100%. Hey, I'm curious. You've seen these newscasters just falling apart where they can't even put a sentence together, and they just start going off and just completely nonsensical, not even forming words. I don't even know what you'd call it. Almost
you've
like speaking in tongues or something.
You've noticed that too? I think that's the strangest thing, that these people are normally reading some kind of a teleprompter, but it's like the instant the sentence runs out on the teleprompter, they go, and the weather's really great today, and, you know.
Well, I mean, there's something going on where there's been three that have hit on YouTube. You should check it out. But three reporters, all of a sudden they start going, blip, 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 like they start talking so weird. And it's like some alien language or something. And they're on the air. You know, it's a major, one was at the Grammys. There's two others out there. And we got an email from this guy that's in the business. And he said that a lot of his seasoned reporters are just totally falling apart. He said, lucky a lot of it wasn't live. It was pre-recorded, and they couldn't even put a sentence together. And they were talking about kind of getting dizzy and feeling all out of sorts. And something really big is going on there. And I don't know if it's some kind of mind control test, you know, or people are just falling apart that are aligning with the old program of pushing the fear and disinformation, if their minds just aren't functioning on that level. There's something really strange going on there.
Well, I think that the vibrations that the Earth is being subjected to right now are really causing a universal and simultaneous inspiration for those who will receive it. And when that conflicts with what they have been told to do, what they've been ordered to do, the mind goes into a state of confusion. And I think that's what we're beginning to see, even in our leaders. You know, even Obama, he hasn't been able to – I mean, he puts together a great speech. His speeches are awesome. But his actions are unbelievably dumb. I just can't believe the stuff that he's doing. And then, you know, everything that is said is a corrective action for what has been done, and everything conflicts with everything. And you're exactly right. There's this energy of confusion and lack of mission in everything they're doing.
Yeah, and I've seen too. It's funny people are putting these clips together on YouTube where they made all these promises, like about 10 or 15 promises. Very clear date, times, what they're going to do. And they've not only gone in the opposite direction of their promises, they've gone over and above the opposite direction into like 10 times worse than than the previous problem. So, you know, it's just, when you look at it, it's just unbelievable. And, I have a hard time with people that are not walking their talk or not walking in integrity. And they can put out a message that is so forceful and full of conviction and so energetically charged, you know, and they sound so believable, but when you look at their actions, they're entirely opposite. And so when I see them up there talking, I just go, ugh, you know, like, why are you even doing this? Why, you know, it's like, you're insulting our intelligence. Why are you continuing to deceive us like this? And when you're doing exactly the opposite of what you're professing to be there for.
Well, yeah, we're watching it around us all the time. And one of the things that that I find hopeful is that the number and power of those who have come up in the last, oh, I'm going to say 5 years, have really become great speakers, great presenters, written great books, done great films. They're finally getting a venue. And I think it's, you know, it's largely the internet that they're able to get their message out there. It's Facebook. Oh, yeah. They're able to put together their social networks. But it's also venues like yours, because you're so well known, and that setting up there has become an icon in this genre. And I mean, I've spoken there every year since 2005, and I've got to tell you, it's changed my life. It just has. I you know, work. I'm a workaholic. Okay, I work all the time.
Uh-huh.
But that is like that's like a mecca. It's like a respite for me. I get this amazing holiday, like going to heaven for 3 or 4 days.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it's like going up there. I have a listener that just wrote in. He said, James Gilliland rocks. He tells me, great testimonial regarding the ranch. Bravo. Tell James to stand tall. He is an inspiration to all beings of light and love, as you are as well. Thank you very much, listener. I appreciate that very much.
That's nice. Yeah, I just try to do what my soul tells me to do and be authentic. And I always tell people, I'm not your guru. You know, I'm not infallible. I make mistakes like everybody else. And, you know, I'm just going to do the best I can. And that's all that's expected of us, is to just do the best we can and try to walk in the highest integrity and live in harmony with each other and the planet. It's not rocket science what needs to happen here. But unfortunately, a vast majority of people have just fallen asleep and have sold out for those little digital numbers and green pieces of paper. And we'll basically do whatever they're told and not even question, you know, how it's going to impact humanity and the earth or their fellow man.
Well, we just continue to try to send the tyrant love. And sooner or later, the message that they're putting out will stop resonating with people, and the message of love will. And they used to say in the 60s, one of these days they're going to throw a war, and nobody's going to come.
Yeah. I just heard a really funny comment by this one person. They talked about, I think, I can't remember what the name, they said, you know, Bob noticed this object was growing bigger and bigger and bigger, and finally it hit him that it was a baseball, you know, and hit him right between the eyes, basically. And I think that's kind of a metaphor of what's going on right now, because, you know, we can see something's coming. We know something is coming. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And are we going to wait till it hits us right between the eyes? Or are we going to step aside and do something? And I think some people are just going to get hit between the eyes, and some people are going to wake up and do something.
I was on another talk radio program not long ago, and they had said, you know, because I was talking about the union of the polarity, and they said, well, what would be safe? What would you do? I said, well, for one thing, I wouldn't live on the beach, because we're going to see some tsunamis, and they're going to be pretty devastating. And she came back and said, well, I live on the beach, and I'm not ready to leave. I said, look, if it was me, I would go to the beach, take some pictures, for memory, and I'd pack my stuff, and I'd get the heck out of there. And sure enough, yeah. about 2.5 weeks later, the Japanese tsunami hit, and it could have hit the West Coast. They were really, really lucky.
Oh, yeah. Well, it did. I know in Northern California, it did quite a lot of damage in Santa Cruz to the docks there and a lot of the boats. And so they did have quite a mess down there. There were certain areas that did hit, you know, but you didn't hear anything about it. But it wasn't anywhere near as big as Japan. And, you know, I have some friends in Japan right now, and we actually helped with a fundraiser, put that information out for Khan, who's one of the teachers that is comes up here, and he teaches some very ancient arts, you know, like Oriental arts, you might say, and other things. But, you know, we had some other people, and when they were here, I told them, I asked them to stay here. I said, you know, what do you think about staying here and just being, you know, staying on site and being a teacher? And he's just big mountain of joy. He's just huge. I don't know how tall he is, probably 6'6" or something. You know, for a Japanese guy, that's, you know, he's just huge. And he's just this big mountain of joy and very powerful teacher. And he says, no, I need to return. And I said, well, you know, Japan is going to hit really hard. And I didn't see the nuclear incident, but I did see the tsunami and the earthquakes there. And I said, you know, the future is not looking good for Japan, you know, according to a lot of the visions I've seen. And I told him, I said, are you sure you don't want to just stay here and teach here? And he said, no. And he went back, and he's right in the middle of it. And luckily, his whole town, his whole village he was raised in is gone. It's no longer there. And his parents were there and everything else. And luckily, by some miracle, his parents just happened to be somewhere else, you know, when the tsunami came running through. And it took him quite a few weeks to find his parents, that his parents were okay, and some of his other friends and family. So I don't think he lost a lot of friends, you know, a lot of personal friends, and his whole neighborhood's gone. But luckily he did find his parents. And I have people over there right now that I'm still Skyping with. And you know, it's very sad. And we've been doing Ustream healing meditations for Japan and sending energy here from Iseti, because this is a real power spot. It's a vortex. And so we've been sending that energy over to Japan to help them in this process. And you know, hoping some of the ETs will start getting involved in cleaning up some of that mess. But, you know, you really think about it. I mean, they've been screaming at us for years, get rid of the nuclear weapons, get rid of the nuclear generators, all of that. They said they've been screaming since the 50s, telling us, do not go there. And we've arrogantly gone there. And now we're demanding they clean up the mess we made. And I just, you know, to me, it just blows me away that the same people that called you every name in the book when you told them to get rid of the nukes are now calling you every name in the book because, you know, you're not, you know, demanding that the ETs clean up the mess they made. You know, it's just a form of insanity. And you know, we do have lessons we need to learn. And you know, one thing I really wanted to mention, you know, Diablo Canyon and what's the other one? San Onofre are right on that same fault line.
Oh, yeah. San Onofre built in 1965.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if anybody is paying attention to what just happened and are over there checking that one out and figuring out some way to safely shut that thing down. I mean, they're right there on the coast.
Well, the interesting thing about the units that were built in Japan is they were designed and built by GE. Now, GE is, if you, let's just connect the dots really quickly. Late last year, we received the funds back from the bailout of the banks. Now, that money should have gone into paying off the debt or should have gone back into stimulus to help create jobs in this country. $3.3 trillion of it was sent out to Europe and to multinational global corporations at, get this, 0.0% interest, 0.0%. in order to, quote, shore up the credit markets. One of the biggest recipients of that money at 0.0% interest was GE. A few weeks later, Obama announces his new leader for economic recovery. It's the CEO of GE. So GE just posted a $40 billion profit. $40 billion profit. And they were the recipients of the 0% interest. They built all the nuclear power plants in Japan, most of which have some problems, some of which have tremendous amounts of problems right now, and they're now an eyesore to the world. And they're the head of the economic recovery. That's what blows my mind.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, well, were the Goldman Sachs were the same guys that created the crash were actually put in charge of fixing the crash. So it's basically what I see is just the mega corporations and this reckless greed program and turning a blind eye to putting the whole earth in jeopardy is really coming to a head right now. And if you haven't figured it out by now, you're just not paying attention in any way whatsoever. But you know, the problem is that we do have these mega corporations. They're soulless. They have no concern for humanity on the earth. Their bottom line is profit. And they're going to cut whatever corners they can to make the biggest profit possible. And they're going to build these giant monsters that they can't contain, you know, which are these nuclear reactors. And that's going to go on and on and on until a very big lesson comes down the pike, you know, and slaps everybody in the face and then wakes people up and then they start looking at who is behind it. And I think that's what Japan is all about. It's just a huge wake-up call as to what is really going on. And the roots of that disaster are so deep and so dark, and what's going on there is just beyond imagination.
And I know
the more they dig into that, they're going to be going, oh my God, you know, this is beyond insanity.
It really is. And, you know, Japan was sold a bill of goods with those nuclear power plants. There are some areas, like when I worked in Japan, they had wind generators. And one thing Japan has a lot of, especially on the east coast that faces the Pacific, is wind. Oh, my gosh, you can't believe it. I used to tell them, you know, if you go out there and turn those fans off, this wind will quit. But they don't use them enough. They only have a few here and there. And if they put more up and take advantage of the wind, they wouldn't have any of those nuclear power plants up.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you and I both know some German scientists. We won't mention any names. And I personally held devices, and I saw some other ones made that you could plug right into these nuclear turbines, you know, these generators, and spin these turbines fuelessly and provide all the electricity we need. And also, they're portable. And unfortunately, these people that have come out with these devices end up having their families threatened, their businesses blown up, labs burned, you know, everything. It's just, and I've been right in the middle of some of that and have watched it firsthand. And I've actually held the technology and stood there with rocket scientists who are now dead and NASA scientists and other people who saw the technology as well and know it exists. So that's another very sad scenario, is that we haven't needed, like the work you're doing with the electric cars and things like that, we haven't needed fuel for a long, long time. And if you took one of these little devices and put it in one of your electric cars, you could run the rubber off that thing, and it would go forever. And then on top of that, you could actually, if you got the right devices, you wouldn't need tires. You know, you could actually just...
Well,
you
know, all someone has to do is make
kind of gravity.
I know the technology's out there. I know it is.
Yeah.
But if they ever bring it to us, we'll put it in the truck. You bet. We want it to proliferate.
Yeah.
We've got the ability to proliferate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the problem is, and you and I both know, there's some hitmen, you know, that are sponsored by these mega corporations that they want to keep, you know, people enslaved through dependency. They want to keep these other programs going, and you know, they don't want anything that's going to cut into their profit or their control program. And well, that's very sad because the Earth itself is paying a very dear price for that.
Even if we ran our factory at full tilt for 10 years, we wouldn't put a scratch on the usage of oil. We might on gasoline, but, you know, gasoline is not very high profit. The other stuff that you use to make plastics and durable goods, that's what oil should be used for, not for burning. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Japan actually created these devices that, have you seen those? They just take plastic and turn it back into fuel.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen them.
Yeah, they have incredible technology over there. And my feeling, too, is one of the reasons why I know there was three things going on there. One is they were refusing to turn over their economy to certain international bankers. And that was going back and forth in arguments and people getting in trouble. And they were trying to be infiltrated and having their entire economy taken over. Was one thing. They were bucking that system big time. And also, too, is they were having meetings about 911 in their parliament and coming to the conclusion that it was an inside job, that it wasn't what we were told. And then the third thing they did was they started putting out cars that ran on water and magnetic motors and things like that. They were about ready to come out with a next generation cars that would have just taken all of our auto factories and just put them right in the toilet. So, you know, any one of those three things can make a country disappear or can bring serious consequences. And I would not be surprised at all if some HARP technology or something else was involved in this, because you looked at what was happening in the political programs and the monetary programs and the technology programs there. They were all a huge thorn in the side of certain of the scientific oligarchy, you know, that's in control of the real technology and wants to keep everybody, you know, enslaved through dependency.
Well, it's a pretty straight shot from the north slope of Alaska to Japan. It's not a hard thing to figure out. Somebody's going to connect the dots there. I don't want to say anything.
Well, the Russians actually came out and said there was a signature there. And they also picked up readings that, and you'd know more than I would about it, but they said at a certain decibels or whatever they're running would actually go this far into the ground and would create a quake at that level, and that's exactly the level these quakes are busting loose at.
Yeah, another one went today, 6.5, just a few hours ago. Mm-hmm. Same spot. Well, James, we're out of time. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program. It only takes a few moments to have a visit by James on X Squared Radio, because we get into it, and I'm telling you, Earth Explorers, 3 hours goes by so fast it just blows your mind. Anyway, if you want to help out James's cause, and we encourage every listener to this program to do so, go to eseti.org, click on the link to help with the legal expenses at the ranch, and let's see if we can't preserve the sanctuary. So I'm just encouraging you all to do that. James, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the program, always.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. You know, I hate to cover some of these other issues that may seem fear and doom and gloom, but we do need to pay attention. I would say if there's a scorpion in your bed, it's best to get rid of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Don't sleep with scorpions.
Yeah.
All right. Have a wonderful week, my friend. Hope the weather gets better up there.
All right. You too.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
All right, Earth Explorers. That is it for X Squared Radio. Thank you so much for being part of the program. Those of you that Skyped in, left me messages, I appreciated it. Good information coming in. Next week will be next month, will be April. So hang in there. We'll see you next week right here on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.